Sports.com Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I've got Matt Moore ready to get this pick and roll podcast, or I'm sorry, pick and troll podcast going. Matt, do you know what winds are blowing right now?
Trade winds are blowing, Zach.
Trade winds,
they are blowing.
We are mere 10 days, essentially, away. I don't like to count the actual day we're on because I figure the day's almost over. We're 10 days away from the NBA trade market being completely open with guys who signed this summer.
Yeah, it's. And I talked to three guys I've talked to in the last week who I would classify in the sources with knowledge category.
Yes.
Or people with knowledge, persons with knowledge thing, whatever that is. People I've talked to that would know about these things have all said when the 15th occurs, then, assuming it does occur and you know the Mayans don't come early or something,
right.
Between then and Christmas, it's going to get a little nuts for a while because everyone's really going to get on the phone. There's starting to be some conversations in terms of feeling it out, but the impression that I was given is that once the 15th comes, like there's going to be a lot of activity because under the new CBA, all of these contracts are so much smaller now, everything's a lot more movable. And it makes it more urgent to get the guys that are big contracts that you cannot deal with right now to start moving them.
And you don't have to match as closely as you did in the previous CBA.
Right.
It's like 150% now, right, instead of 125%, essentially.
Right. And then the other impact is, and we're going to see this probably throughout the year, probably the trade deadline, and then you mentioned it at the draft. I think that's going to be another case of where we're going to see a lot of activity. The move, because sign-in trades are so much more complicated under the new CBA, the impacts are really taken into effect this summer. That's really going to limit some of this movement. So there's going to be a desperation lunge to create cap space.
Yeah.
So that talent's got to go somewhere. So if you're a buyer right now, you're going to have some opportunities.
The biggest name on the trade block is kind of like Pau Gasol is the hot seat coach of NBA players. He's always seemingly always on the trade block.
He's
Norv Turner. He's Mike Brown. He's maybe Vinny Del Negro right now.
Right, and you know it's even you who are an admitted you love Pau's
game. I'm a Pau apologist.
Yeah, and even you are like, it is not good right now.
Yeah, I can't make anything good out of the situation.
He's been ruled out tonight versus the Rockets with tendonitis in both knees. I like these kind of situations. Not that I like he's hurt, but I like situations because what you see is the modern environment doesn't speak to really one narrative. You've got, he's just unhealthy. Let's let him get healthy and he'll be fine. You've got, you know, he just needs to get adjusted to D'Antoni's system and he'll be okay. You've got, you know, when Nash gets back, he's going to be a lot more comfortable and have a lot more opportunities. That'll be fine. You've got some combination of all those, and then you've got, he has not bought into D'Antoni. And that, to me, is where I'm at. Like, I don't think he's past his ability to be effective. I don't think he's washed up. I don't think that he's mentally weak to the point that he can't be an effective player. I think that he is really comfortable in LA, and it's been a taxing 3 years for him, essentially since that first round series, the second round series in 2011. Yeah, in 2011, where they got swept by the Mavericks. You know, he had some personal stuff go on in that series, and that's not what's been lingering. But since that time, he really hasn't been the same, and he's had to, you know, he never really bought into Mike Brown, and you can't really blame him for that. He's also not buying into Mike D'Antoni, and whether you can blame him for that or not, they don't have any choice in the situation. Like, this isn't one where it's like, well, just fix the coach and it'll be fine. They can't fix the coach anymore. You can't pay three coaches $25 million.
Right.
Like, they're going to have to make this work for a little while. So, you know, if he can't buy in, and he's, you know, it was really weird because, like, you saw the comments and nobody really honed in on it, and I wasn't trying to, like, target Gasol, but, you know, he said very openly that he was disappointed with Phil Jackson not coming back and that he said, you know, look, Mike D'Antoni's been hired and we're going to have to make the best of it, is what he said.
Right. Not exactly a ringing endorsement.
Right? Like, It's like, well, okay, we didn't escape the car wreck. We lost our leg, but we're going to have to live with it. It's like, and you can't have it. That's a big thing. It's like, you got to buy into the system. I've mentioned this like a million times on the podcast, but I'm going to do it again. Like, rereading 7 seconds or less, that's a lot of what that success of that team was, is D'Antoni was able to get through to those guys.
It's impressive how quickly he got through to them, too.
Yeah, and a lot of the guys really, and the guys they brought in really embraced it because they were a winning team, so it was like, I want, you're winning, so I want to buy in.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the thing is like, maybe that was why the situation worked so well in Phoenix, because he brought a team from nothing up. And so when he started to add in guys, they were already like, okay, this is working, I can buy in here. Right. Versus in New York, they weren't winning and were expected to win. And so it was, he didn't really have a track record in New York to be able to establish himself as we're going to be successful. So that, and then you deal with, Melo's attitude, which we talked about before. But, you throw that in. And so with Gasol, it's like, I think Kobe's buying in. I don't think Kobe's unhappy with the system. I think he's upset by some of the defensive stuff. But, I don't think he's not buying in. I think a lot of the guys are into what they're trying to do, but I don't think that Powell is in a place where he's happy, but I also don't think he wants to be traded. He loves LA.
Right. What's weird is I was talking about this with people yesterday. I just assumed, all right, he's Boris Diaw and look how much better and how much more skilled Powell is than Boris Diaw when you make that automatic correlation between the two rosters. But when Amari came back, it's something I didn't think about. When Amari came back, Boris really kind of went down in his production, went down in his role, and didn't have a fit. And Dwight is Amari, essentially, right?
Right.
And so for some reason, within D'Antoni's system, the two big men don't click, which doesn't make sense to me. It just seems like these guys should click just based on the skill set alone. And really, in any system, they should click. And the fact that that's not happening, I don't know if that's systemic or if it's just Powell doesn't have it right now.
I think there's a couple things. I think one thing, somebody mentioned this, that when Howard's off the floor, he takes like 25% more or like 25 percentage points more shots in the paint.
Yeah.
And what to me that says is that that's all about spacing. Right. They're trying not to clog the lane, but Powell had so much success with Bynum and Odom at just be in the lane and tip shots back in.
Yeah.
Like, I said it for years. I was like, do you want to know the secret to the Lakers? Be really tall. That's what makes the Lakers really – that's really honestly why they won two titles, is Kobe was great and Powell and Bynum were really tall. Like, Gasol's exceptionally talented. He's got fantastic – like, his turnaround jumper when it's falling is beautiful. And he's a really smooth passer. He's also really tall.
Yeah.
And I think that moving him out, because you can't, in D'Antoni's system, I don't think it's conducive to have both those guys down low. That's causing some of the problems in terms of his efficiency. But that's also, if he's physically worn down, he's not going to want to do that either.
Right. And he's not making his jumper.
Yeah.
At least not at the rate that you would need it to be.
Some people have mentioned that there's too many facilitators on the team, and I it's weird to think about that, but I think it's kind of true. Like, they've been a little unselfish to the point of it hurting them.
I honestly don't agree with that. I think you can pass too much, but I don't think you can have too many facilitators, if that makes sense.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, and I think passing too much is the issue. Is too many guys are trying to do that, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
That's a staple of Kobe Bryant teams. Just too much passing.
And so, I will say this, because that's the thing I've noticed, though, is like, I look at Powell's passing, and I've really been like, wow, like, he's passed really well. And you're like, yeah, but his assists aren't up. I'm like, that's irrelevant. Like,
right.
Like, I can watch, like, I'm big on stats, but I can watch a guy's passing and be like, he's passing really well, and that does not mean that he's getting assists. Whether they're hockey assists or the guys aren't making shots.
Right.
I really have felt like his passing has still been really good, and he's been a willing guy, and, in the position that he's doing it is working really well. But, I see the Nuggets a lot where there are, like, I kind of want to do a column, and I don't know how to exactly figure it out. I just have to watch a ton of video, because I want to figure out the guys in the league that are assist killers. Because, like,
right.
I mentioned it last night, Kenneth Faried is Ezio Auditore from the Assassin's Creed series in killing assists. Like every single time, Ty Lawson will, Lawson or Iguodala will drive the lane and then dish off to Faried, and he'll miss the easy one and then get his rebound and put it back in.
Yeah.
And so he gets the offensive rebound and the putback. And he's not doing it on purpose. He just doesn't finish off of the pass.
That's something I did this big breakdown of Timberwolves' three-point shooting for A Wolf Among Wolves.
I don't think big is the word for that.
2,400 words. 2,394 to be exact. And they're historically bad. Like, they're looking to become the... I mean, it's very early. It's only 15 games in, but they've also lost their best three-point shooter for the majority of the season. They're shooting under 29%, which since in the last 20 years, only 9 teams have done that for a season, and it hasn't been done since the 2002-03 Denver Nuggets. And one thing I noticed in that video, I watched every three-point shot from the Wolves so far this season, which, let me tell you, that is a scotch-drenched experience right there. There were so many possessions where you see the ball swung to Derek Williams. And I've said, the results aren't there for Derek Williams this year, but I love his decision-making. Like, he's been a lot better. And he has been a lot better. I stand by that. However, there are so many possessions where he catches a pass and just waits and holds it. Because for some reason he doesn't know, he's not processing enough quickly. And he's one of those guys that's an assist killer.
Yeah.
It's one of those things of, like, there are assist killers of guys who just don't score off the pass, and there are guys who completely, we call them ball stoppers, but it's more than that. It's a ball stopper to the sense of indecision with the ball, not, all right, now I'm going to do my own thing.
Right. To your point, Timberwolves are second to last in the league in effective field goal percentage at 45.4%. The Washington Wizards are the only team worse than them by 1.3%.
Yeah.
It's bad. Okay, we're looking at Powell, right? So there's basically three options that are the most discussed. I don't think that they're going to happen because every time that we think that – I find that whenever there's rampant discussion about three targeted options, that's never what happens. That's something out of the blue.
Right.
Except in the case of where a player wants to go somewhere. Like when Carmelo says, I want to go to New York, then you figure out how it happens.
Right.
So it's New York, Atlanta, and Toronto. I think are the three big options. New York for Amari and what would be a pretty close to straight up deal where D'Antoni gets Amari back and New York gets somebody that's healthier relatively and, we're probably going to defer a little bit less, a better defender. That helps them out. I mean, Tyson Chandler and Pau Gasol,
you talked about the Lakers were just taller than everybody.
Yeah, that's 14.
That really helps the Knicks be taller than everybody.
Yeah, and that's one where I feel like Gasol can play power forward and not have to work in the post, so Carmelo can still play power forward.
Right.
Offensively. And Gasol can space the floor and then do tip backs, and you can run, you can run a Carmelo Tyson deal. I don't think the Lakers will take on. The injuries with Amari are just I hate that it's true because I wanted to believe that it wasn't going to be the case, but he just looked like too much damaged goods. A key component whenever I talk about this trade with Gasol on Twitter or whatever, and let me know if you agree with this, I've never seen the Lakers lose a deal. Like, they always get not just a better deal, they get the best deal. We do winners and losers on trades on every single trade, a major trade that happens in the NBA on this blog on CBSSports.com. And I don't think I've ever given we do grade it and we do winners and losers. And I don't think I've ever put the Lakers in the loser category outside of maybe Derek Fisher. And even that, they ended up winning with Jordan Hill being really okay. And I don't think I've ever given them any less than an A.
I'm really trying to think of a time where I thought, oh, they didn't win that trade.
Yeah.
You have to think that with even the Dwight trade, it was a resounding... I mean, they got arguably the third best player in the league at the time, and he's coming back from back injury, but they gave up a lot and still won the trade.
Yeah.
And they want, like, a trade that seemed completely random and confusing was the Lamar Odom trade to Dallas. They won that trade.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like the one where you're like, oh, they got ruined on the nope. Like, and like Cuban at this point is like spy versus spy with trading with the Lakers.
Right.
Like, you know, I've got you now. And then, like, you know, the giant punching bag, like the giant fist pops out of a window and hits him in the face.
Right.
So from that perspective, of the three options I listed, Josh Smith is probably the best player. I know that's going to make you cringe, but I think you can agree with that. Like, Josh Smith is the best player, but Josh Smith isn't better than Pau Gasol. And that's the issue I talked about Monday in the inbounds. I talked about the Pau dilemma because – and we're going to talk about something now, and it's bugged me this morning because I keep coming back to it. The only trade I can think out there, the only player I can see that they can see getting better who would make them better and would make sense in terms of him liking LA and everything is Kevin Love.
Yeah.
And it sounds insane to me. And I said yesterday, I was like, well, that's not – and in the inbounds, I said that's not going to happen because the Wolves are never, ever, ever going to trade Kevin Love no matter how much discord he may have with their management. But but given that there's a pretty pronounced history of the Wolves being interested in Pau Gasol, and given the conditions, the only way I can see it happening, if it's one of those things where it happens and no one can understand why the Timberwolves did it. Like, we often do this where we're like, well, that's so stupid, that would never happen. But then it happens because stupid stuff happens in the NBA all the time. Like, that's the only situation in which that can happen. Like, I have faith that Adelman would bar the door to the conference room to make the call with a crowbar. But it worries me. Does it worry you at all?
No. A year ago? Yeah. Up to a year to a year and a half ago, I would have thought it was possible. Even after Kevin Love's breakout, you know, 20 and 15 season, there were still rumors and there's still talk that David Kahn was shopping Kevin Love because he was a Kevin McHale guy and he wasn't one of Kahn's guys. And they don't exactly get along. And so even after his 2015 season, there was talk that, yeah, Kevin Love was still being shopped. Adelman came in, and after last season, Adelman essentially took over who to get, you know, saying, I want these guys gone. I want you to try to get these guys. And then it's David Kahn's job to take that grocery list and go get the groceries. And at this point, Adelman has so much clout within the organization and his team of people is so ingrained in the organization that this would have to be a thing where Kahn goes to Taylor, the Timberwolves owner, and says, this is what we have to do, and Adelman ends up resigning because of it. Like, that's the only way it's going to happen. Love can opt out for the 2015 season. Pau is up in 2014. Like, the timelines just don't match up. If Love had one less year on his deal, if he could opt out after next season, then I think it would happen around the trade deadline next year.
Yeah.
I would think it's possible. But because of the contract lengths, they're 1 year off to where I think there would be at least like a 20% chance of it happening. With that said, after I post this podcast, I'm sure that Kevin Love has been traded to the Los Angeles Lakers.
and Rick Adelman has resigned.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to be giving you – I've just given you night terrors for like the next week, Kevin. The contract length is the same reason I don't think Atlanta does it, because I think that Ferry knows that there's no point in him getting Gasol. I think he knows him getting Gasol doesn't give them a championship, so he's got to wait.
Well, and I don't think it makes sense for the Lakers in terms of contract length. Josh Smith is up after this year, and you would have to re-sign him, and re-signing him cuts into this enormous cap space they're going to have in a couple years when they can go out and sign Kevin Love, when they can go out and throw money at Dwight Howard, still have Nash under contract, however effective he is, and go out and sign major free agents, assuming Kobe Bryant retires. And if you acquire Josh Smith and then re-sign him, you've completely screwed that up.
But then if you re-sign he and Howard, then you've got Smith and Howard, and you could build around that.
Yeah, but would you rather build around Smith and Howard or Smith and Love? Or Howard and Love?
Or wait for Love, yeah. And if you're the Lakers, you know, and that's the thing with the Lakers is you're the team that, as long as you have cap space, you're going to get the best free agent.
Actually, now that I think about it, maybe that does make sense because that's a big trade chip to trade for Kevin Love when he's about to become a free agent. Mm-hmm. So maybe you say, hey, Timberwolves, I have Josh Smith for you. How about it?
And the other thing to consider there is, and Smith will still be, have some. He won't be that old yet. Then, but the other thing I think is a reason to do it would be okay. If Howard leaves, we could still have Josh Smith. Like
sure.
Like the way this season is going, Kupchak has got to start looking at. All right, what's the worst case scenario here? Because they're in a rare position where the worst case scenario is really bad. Usually, the worst case scenario with the Lakers is like, well, we'll be a playoff team. Like, we'll be in a position to still make a move. But they're in a position where if this thing doesn't work out and then, like, Powell's on the decline and unhappy and they're stuck with him and Dwight leaves, all of a sudden this doesn't look like as good of a team as it did. You know, like, we're 17 games in. It's no big deal. This thing could still work itself out. You and I have been saying that all along.
Yeah.
But you got with the way that Gasol is acting, I think, is the bigger concern. And that leads us to the third option, which is – I said this the other day, I thought it was nuts because the Lakers can't win a trade in which they move Pau Gasol for Andrea Bargnani because Andrea Bargnani is worse in every single area than Pau Gasol, except maybe three-point shooting.
No, definitely three-point shooting. Pau's not a three-point shooter. People keep thinking, oh yeah, he can stretch it out a little bit. He can't shoot threes. He's not a good three-point shooter.
But I'm also thinking like, with how desperate, because I watched the Raptors last night versus Denver, and yet another horrifyingly heartbreaking. I described this morning in Power Rankings as the Raptors are a staggering work of heartbreaking genius.
Yeah.
Because it is amazing how this team loses games. It is incredible. But I'm looking at it, I'm like, if they package some combination of Bargnani, Calderon, and Ed Davis, and it gives the Raptors the best player that they've had since Bosch. And you've got Kyle Lowry, and you've got DeMar DeRozan. And if they take on Meta World Peace's contract, all of a sudden that doesn't look. I'm starting to be like, that doesn't. Because that's the kind of key here is the only way the Lakers might be able to win this trade because of how good Gasol's estimation still really is. Given the availability of superstars in this league, the only way they can really win this trade is if they get a bevy of things that help them in multiple areas.
Right.
If they get a forward and shooters and a backup point.
Which is both the beauty and the curse of trying to trade Pau Gasol is he makes so much money. So you have to get a lot back for him in terms of bodies because that's the only way to make contracts match at the same time and that can help you fill in areas with multiple players to help you get better as a team, but at the same time it can be very hard to match up $19 million in contracts.
I've come to the conclusion with the Raptors that they've got to trade Bargnani, and I've thought this for a while, but I am resoundingly like 100%, this has to happen for everyone involved. Because I saw last night a player that went out, and when they were up early, and it was entirely because of Bargnani. Because I asked George Karl in pregame, you would love this. I asked George Karl in pregame. I said, Bargnani's, he's had a rough year, but he can also stretch the floor and really hit some threes. You guys have had some struggles with that, and George Karl literally chortled at me when I said that. And I said, is that a concern? And what do you think is going to happen? And, Carl, there are times when, Carl looks at me because he gets so many, how's your team feeling? What's your confidence level? And then, I ask him very specific questions.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's, looking at what's wrong with my team, asking me these very specific questions. But, he's like, I have to be really quick. He's like, I've got to be quick with the decision because if Kenneth Faried can't check him, I have to make the move. And he let him go the first quarter, and sure enough, he just started throwing guys at Bargnani. Throughout the course of that game, he tried Kosta Kufis, JaVale McGee, Danilo Gallinari, Andre Iguodala, and at one point, Jordan Hamilton.
Oh my God, I would watch a one-on-one game of McGee versus Bargnani for hours.
It was incredible. And Bargnani, yeah, here's the really weird part, is actually Kenneth came back, and he eventually wore him down with his energy, and he wound up 23 points on 20 shots. So they wound up kind of winning the war with that. And the biggest thing is Bargnani missed like three late. And I made this comment this morning to a bunch of Raptors writers, and they all just kind of nodded their heads solemnly, which was the Raptors would have been so buried by so much they couldn't have even made the comeback they did if Bargnani hadn't been so good early. And they would have won the game if they had traded him out for any sort of superior player at the end.
Yeah.
And so they're like, I really think that after the 15th, you're going to see the Raptors are. I would put pretty good odds on the Raptors making a move by Christmas. I think that with Calderon's contract, with Bargnani, who the money's a lot, but it's not as bad as you think. Like it's not it's like Gasol money, right? So you can kind of live with it because they've taken a couple of years off now to where you can probably make the move, and they really need to get a guy in there that makes more sense for Dwayne Casey.
Yeah, but here's the thing: is how many times do we talk, and capologists and everyone examining payroll say it's not the max contracts that kill you; it's the guys that make $10 million a year.
Yeah, that's true.
And what does Bargnani make?
$10 million a year.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, in theory, yeah, you're right. It's not a lot of money, and it's movable. I think it's very movable after this year. But that's also if everyone is allegedly, and this is me assuming a lot, if everyone is allegedly getting smarter about how they spend their money in terms of long-term money and avoiding those $10 million a year deals, and by the way, Ilyasova, Jeff Green, all just got about $9 million a year. So right. maybe not everyone is getting smarter, but that's where we're supposed to be headed. I think that might be the biggest obstacle for getting Bargnani.
There's two teams that I think are kind of wild cards in both the Raptors and the Lakers situation. One of them is Utah. Because Utah is in this really weird – I've said this for about a year. They're in this great, terrible situation where they've really got to make a move because it's just like, okay, you know, the clock has run out on trying to make this log jam of four great forward – work. Like, it's just time. Like,
right.
It was cute for a while that you made it work, but Kanter needs more minutes. Jefferson probably needs to move at the four. You know, you don't know if you're going to get Millsap back. You don't know if you're going to get Jefferson back. And Favors you want to get more time for. So, you know, there's got to be at some point, like, you, and I think a lot of it is confidence, too. Like, you need to give one of these guys and say, look, you're our guy. Like, you know, even if you keep Millsap and Jefferson, or if you keep Millsap or Jefferson and Favors, right? So you're going to move either Millsap or Jefferson because they're not going to move Favors. You know, you're still telling Favors, you're our guy, go out and get this done for us. And then he can go do that and get his extension. And then, you know, with Millsap or Jefferson, then they're like, okay, they're going to re-sign me. I feel good about this. I can feel more confident. You know, and Kanter can kind of come up slowly and develop.
Right.
But they've got to really move that. And they've got parts to move, and they've got veterans who aren't making tons. So they've got these deals that are, you know, they can kind of move some guys around. They've got Rajah Bell's, like, corpse lying around to be able to throw into a deal. And I like Rajah Bell a lot as a player, but that situation's been a nightmare.
I still cannot believe he is 19th all-time in three-point percentage.
Right? Right? And so, Mike D'Antoni, man. Let's see where Jody Meeks ends up. So
Jody Meeks is going to end up 1 and 2.
So you got that situation, and the other team. And I want to make this very, 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 very clear. I am stating on the record that this, what I am about to say, is not come from anyone inside the Nuggets organization. I have not spoken to anyone inside the Nuggets organization about this. I have not broached the subject with anyone inside the Nuggets organization. This is not inside information whatsoever, and I am not just saying that to cover my ass. Like, I am literally telling you, I don't talk about this with them because I feel like it's a weird situation and it just hasn't come up, honestly.
Okay, so sources say.
I do think that the Nuggets have two things. They've got Ken Kenneth Faried on a rookie contract, and they've got Danilo Gallinari on that $10 million a year. And we said that $10 million is a killer, but Gallo's one where he might be worth it.
Yeah, Gallo is a promising player. He's not like one of those random veterans who just ends up with 4 years, $40
million. Watching them play each other last night, I kind of realized that in like comic books and movies and in video games, there's always kind of like that inverse world, like the world that's like in the negative of photos. Like everything's kind of inversed, right? Like right. In Super Mario World, where everything's kind of where everything's dark. They're kind of on the flip side. They're both making $10 million a year, and Gallo's kind of on the like, oh, promising, and oh, he's a good defender, and he's kind of versatile. Like, yeah, he's got some limitations, but overall, he's really pretty good. He's just not a star guy. And then Bargnani is like the inconsistent, bad defender, can hit some shots. You know, you wish he was just a little bit better guy. So they're kind of on that kind of line. So I think it's interesting though that they've got the Nuggets have those two guys, plus they've got Wilson Chandler to be able to throw in.
Right.
So they can make a move if they feel like they need to, and the Nuggets are one where they really they're in a bad spot because they can't make an estimation maybe because of the schedule. Like, they just can't. They got no idea knowing how good this team is until January 30th.
What's weird, back to the Jazz real quick, is I feel like they almost have too many movable parts.
Yeah.
You know?
I know what you're saying.
Like, they have too many options to trade, and that could end up leaving them without a trade.
Yeah, because I've seen GMs do that where they're like, they're like, oh, we have so many good pieces to move. I don't want to waste them. And then it's like you don't do anything with them. And then all you have is a bunch of guys that whose best value is as trade assets.
Yeah, it's like someone walks into like one of those frozen yogurt shops and they look at all the toppings and they look at everything they can put on there. And then they just walk out. They're like, I can't make a decision. There's no way I could. I can't choose at all. And I'm not going to decide what gets cast away. So I'm just out of here.
Like, the answer is always gummy bears. That's, by the way, that's my estimation.
All right. This is a problem I have with people who make frozen yogurt concoctions and then they rip gummy bears because, oh, they get hard and cold. Right, because you put them on ice cream. But that doesn't change it. They're very – like even putting it with just a nice vanilla frozen yogurt enhances their flavor so much.
It does. It's really remarkable. I didn't start doing it until this year.
Yeah. This anti-gummy bear frozen yogurt thing has got to end. It's one of the worst things that plagues our society.
I agree. And we need to start a movement about this. Yeah. There needs to be a website. Look at the Jazz, right? So you got Alec Burks, rookie contract, shooter with upside, you know, got some athleticism. Yeah, the numbers aren't great, but you can see him doing better in another system. Like Damari Carroll, pure hustle guy. He's got great stats in terms of his production per minute. Yeah, he's erratic and all that, but he's one of those like pure hustle guys that you kind of like to have around. Like Jeremy Evans, high upside. Like Derek Favors, again, you could probably, if they put him on the market, they're going to get a ton of offers for him. Like Randy Foy, like, veteran guard that can do a lot and can shoot. Like, Gordon Hayward, all of these guys, you're right, all of these guys on this roster I'm looking at, and I'm like, you can move all of these guys. They could trade their entire team.
Just swap it out.
Yeah.
Grab one player from every team.
One player from every team. So yeah, I think that those are the kind of situations, and you wonder if the Lakers are going to get a third team involved if they were to do the Gasol trade, which I wrote this morning when I did the Gasol post on him being out tonight that there still continues to be rampant speculation. Here's where I'm at, right, is the Lakers are letting it known through media outlets that they want to see how he does when Nash comes back.
Right.
My problem is I bought into, oh no, they're not going to fire Mike Brown. They want to see how this team comes together. That's all I heard was I heard for a month straight with Mike Brown when they were losing, they're not going to fire him. They want to be patient.
I mean, they said that 2 days before they fired him.
Yeah. So it's like, so I don't know what to believe. And that's why I think we have to talk about it. Is there anybody else notable? Barajal's the other one on the market.
I think Barajal's one, but I honestly don't. I still don't believe in trading him if you're the Cavs, at least not now. Unless you just get an absolute blow-you-away offer. And someone mentioned this offer to me on Twitter. If you could get Kendrick Perkins, Perry Jones III, and Jeremy Lamb, do you do that? And you're clearly not getting a player as good as Barajal, but you are getting assets to acquire and develop. And, I mean, the Perkins contract, it's not bad, but it's just like Perkins just isn't a guy that would work on that team in any way, but maybe you can flip him to a a contender needing a veteran center. I don't think it's a good deal. You probably have to throw in a draft pick or two, but it's a good enough deal to where I don't really know the answer.
So Jeremy Lamb and Perry Jones have both been assigned to the D-League.
Right? Yeah.
But there are guys who I say belong in the D-League, and there are guys who I say need to be in the D-League, need to spend time in the D-League. And there's a very big difference. Jeremy Lamb needs to spend time in the D-League. That's what this league should be used for.
Right.
Like, let him drop 35 points, which is what he's doing per game. Like, let him absolutely destroy the competition and get his confidence up and work on his conditioning and stay in game shape and work on his strength and work on all the little things that you want a guy to work on as he develops from a rookie into a rotation player. And then there are guys who deserve to be in the D-League. And I feel like Barry Jones is more of the latter. Like, Feather fans really like him, and I'm like, there's a reason he's not getting time. Like, there's a reason he's down there. And so, to me, I'm like, okay, so you're telling me I'm going to trade my best asset, which is, you know, the guy's averaging, like, what, 17 and 18 or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm going to trade him for Kendrick Perkins, who – is he – I have a hard time because I really – and I wrestle with this, Zach. Is Kendrick Perkins or Serge Ibaka the most overrated defender in the league? Like – it's really hard for me to say because I feel like Serge Ibaka is the most overrated, but he's still good.
The answer is Serdrick Ibakins.
like that to me is the secret is Ibaka is overrated, but is so overrated, but still good. Perkins is slightly overrated, but really pretty bad.
Here's the reason why he might be of value to the Cavs in some way is one, I still think you can flip him. I think there are plenty of GMs who are like, oh my God, Kendrick Perkins? Let's go get him. And I think you can flip him for a decent asset. Two, if you're going to send out Barajau, I think you need to bring in a guy who can teach a trait or a skill to your young big men, to Zeller and to Tristan Thompson. And Perkins can at least teach them how to be physical in the NBA and how not to get pushed back. You know, how not to give anything in terms of a mental edge.
Yeah.
And there is value in that. Now, is that enough value along with two players you really have to develop to give up your best player right now because Irving's hurt? That's a good question. That's when you need to bring in, you know, offer up some draft picks and other assets or maybe find a third team.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is that there's enough workable here to where if you're the Cavs and you think, hey, we can develop young players because that's what you're doing, well, why not bring in two young players with good potential that you could develop?
My big thing with Perkins is he has the most value to any team in the Western Conference that is a playoff contender, that is a championship contender. So it's really – he has the most value to Oklahoma City and San Antonio. Like that's where he has the most value.
Right.
Because they need somebody to throw at Dwight, which is really like what he is known as. Is he is the guy that can guard Dwight one-on-one, unless it's Game 7 of a playoff series, in which case Dwight drops 40 on him.
Right.
Like,
but you know, I wrote about this way back when. I don't mind if Dwight drops 40 on you, as long as you take away the shooters.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and to do that, you have to have a guy that can hold him one-on-one. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that's the point. So, yeah, I think that's...
Like,
that's
I'm not saying that's a great deal for the Cavs, but it's enough where I think you could work something out there.
Yeah, and trying to figure out any other scenario is kind of difficult, right? Because he makes a lot of sense, I think, for San Antonio. Like, God, can you imagine Duncan and Barajau? Like...
That would be really fun.
Because I always say that the Spurs need to get back, and I try and... point out the ridiculousness of the Spurs. To me, of the last, like, you know, what, nine, 10 years, like, the best kind of solution for them or configuration was Duncan with Fabrizio Oberto.
Yeah.
Because all that guy did was play good defense, clean up misses on the far side when guys double Duncan. And do the little tiny things. And so if you take Oberto and then you upgrade him to Barajau, like, holy crap. And so it's like, well, what would you really need there? And it's like, well, they have to give up draft picks, which they're probably going to be hesitant to do because they know that the end is coming.
Yeah.
But it's also like, you know, if I think it depends on if the Spurs want to go out in a blaze of glory or not. Because it's like, all right, it's going to be 2 years for you to really be done anyway. I think Duncan's going to play two more. So you got some time. Like, why not shoot the moon right? Like, you don't need a young player. You've got Kawhi Leonard. That's your young guy. You got Kawhi Leonard, you got Danny Green, you got Gary Neal. Like, those are your young guys. You have to give up probably Tiago and maybe Danny Green.
That's, I mean, to get Varejao, that's nothing to me.
Yeah. But what's amazing is you could probably do that and maybe package it with like Jackson or something, and you could probably make it work. Now they'd have to swap Jackson back out because Jackson's just going to be he's going to go into a depressive funk if he gets traded from San Antonio.
Right.
You know, but I think that there are options there. They won't give up Kawhi. I think that may be the biggest reason it won't happen because I feel like the Cavaliers would be like, we can't give up Varejao to you unless we get Kawhi back, and the Spurs are not going to give up Kawhi. I don't think under any circumstance.
Yeah, I don't see that happening at all. The other team that comes into mind that is a big player in this is Orlando.
Really?
Because not with Varejao, but with the trade wins is because everyone wants J.J. Redick. Like, I don't think there is a single team in the league who wouldn't want J.J. Redick on their roster. He has a very easy cap-friendly deal. He's expiring at $6 million. Very easy to deal. The problem is trying to figure out what Orlando wants and needs out of this. They're going to want a young asset. They're going to want draft picks. And they probably want you to take away at least one of their bad contracts. And I'm going to say this. I don't consider it a bad contract, but it is long-term money. If you can package Redick and, let's say, Aaron Aflalo together to move, that you're moving roughly $14 million in salary, you can bring back a lot of assets with that package.
What's the biggest expiring that we got? I'm trying to think.
In the league?
Yeah. Outside Dwight.
Josh Smith? What is he, like 13, 14?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of it.
But they don't need, like, I mean, they don't need those guys.
Here's the thing. As much as we want to complain about the NBA and all the things that went on in the lockout, God knows I ripped the NBA for it. It's hard to find those Gilbert Arenas deals. Like, it's hard to find, like, or not even the Gilbert Arenas deals. It's hard to find, like, the Ralph Lauren deals. Like the big, massive expirings that don't, with huge money that are just dead weight, are hard to find right now.
Right. This is just me being selfish, and someone said, how did the Minnesota Timberwolves get J.J. Redick? And I thought, and so the trade that I came up with that gets rid of salary for them is the Aflalo Redick package. And it's the deal the Wolves would have to give is the players are Derek Williams, who Orlando would have to believe is someone they can make into an all-star. Like, that's the only way they consider this deal, right?
Right.
Luke Ridnour, who has one more year after this, and Malcolm Lee. Now, not a great package of players unless they believe Derek Williams is that good and they want to shed a flawless contract that bad. But then Minnesota throws in two or three draft picks, and then they would have to consider it, right? Granted, that is a stretch on Minnesota's part, that this would be enough to get those two players. But if they're about shedding contracts and getting assets and they believe in Derek Williams, then maybe they consider it.
It's Williams, draft picks, and who?
Ridnour. Well, the way the money would work out, it would have to be either Ridnour or Barea and Lee. And I put Ridnour in there because he's a shorter contract. Or maybe instead of Lee, you have to throw in Schved. That's probably the deal, actually, that has to happen. And I think the money still matches up.
Okay. Yeah, I think you have to look at Schved. You have to look. I think that if you're the Timberwolves, I think you probably try and – I think that's one you can live with. And if you're the Magic, you're like, well, okay, if Williams doesn't work out, maybe we at least get a pretty solid wing player in Schved.
Yeah.
You know, that one I think would work out pretty well.
But they would have to believe in Williams.
Yeah. Bunger, actually, if Bunger wasn't injured, that'd be another one that would help out with that situation.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to sell this right now because I get asked about 17 times a day. I can't find a single scenario in which the Memphis Grizzlies are able to trade for J.J. Redick. Everyone wants to – everyone seems – really wants this to happen. And I've told you, like, I worry about the locker room chemistry is because the Grizzlies are stable, and that's one of the things that's why they're winning.
Right.
Which is not that I think that Redick is going to be disruptive. I think Redick's fantastic. Like, I wish every single day that Orlando had not matched – not every single day, but that makes me sound obsessive. But, like, I wish a lot that Chicago – or that Orlando hadn't matched Chicago's offer because, God, how good would J.J. Redick have been with Chicago?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I look at what Memphis has to offer, and there's just not –
The only way the deal could really happen is Spates and Ellington, and I would assume two first-round picks for Redick, and that's a lot to give up for J.J. Redick.
For J.J. Redick. And you give up a lot in that situation, too, because you need the depth. Like, that's been one of the things that made Memphis better. Their bench is a disaster.
Yeah.
You know, even if you add J.J. Redick, he's not going to be able to guard enough spots. Speaking of the Bulls, I want to throw that one back at you, though. Think about this, though, okay? So the Bulls have – they've got Rip Hamilton, who they are desperate to get rid of in terms of the cap space. And they've got a bunch of basically crap, right? So they've got Kirk Heiner got a two-year deal, which is not bad. They've got – you know, Deng, I don't think they'll get rid of Deng. But they've got some, like, filler in there. I wonder if they might be able to get a three-team going – to move that out. If the Bulls can either, I think, could be involved in a Redick trade, or they might be able to be a third team. Because the Bulls are going to be one to watch. And if you're listening to this podcast and you're a Bulls fan, I also need to have a little conversation with you right now. I'm going to use your team a lot in a lot of terrible trades that you're going to scream and be angry at the stupidity of and wonder why they would possibly do this. And the answer is your owner is brilliantly cheap. Like, Jerry Reinsdorf will do anything to avoid the luxury tax. He will not pay that. And they are going to trade Hamilton one way or another, even if it's just a dump-off. So I'm going to use them because I know that what their primary concern is getting Rose back, making their money, and they'll figure out how they're going to win a championship later. This season, it's about let's win some games, make some money, and then dump Rip Hamilton to get into the luxury tax. You agree with that, Zach?
Yes. I think we saw that this offseason – Reinsdorf is still absolutely adamant about staying within striking range of getting under the luxury tax at all costs.
Yep.
And as much as that infuriates Bulls fans, that's his right as the owner. You know, that's just how he chooses to spend his money. They're still a very good team. If Rose can come back to 100% health or very close to it, they're still in arguably a title contending team.
Right.
And this summer showed that the most infuriating scenarios for a Bulls fan regarding the depth of that team are all in play.
And it's like, it's really funny too, because it's like, you want to be angry because he's not willing to do whatever it takes to win a championship, but he's willing to do enough to get you in a position where you could possibly win a championship, and all he asks in return is that he doesn't have to go into the luxury tax, spend a little extra, and also he's able to do that because the Bulls have the highest attendance year in and year out every single year.
Yeah.
Like, Bulls fans are tremendous. Like, going to the United Center, the crowd is – it's not like OKC and it's not necessarily like Boston, but it's its own level of really – it's just a really great environment. It's just smart basketball fans.
Yeah, it really is.
So, yeah, I think that's gonna be – I think that's something to watch. You want to do the games real quick for the night?
Yeah, let's do those. We've got six games on the schedule. One that terrifies me right away because I am a Wolves fan is Wolves at 76ers. I do not feel good about this game at all.
No Kirilenko. Sixers minus 3.5 down from 4. So that indicates that they're trying to move the action to the Wolves, which is not a good sign.
Yeah. No Kirilenko. He's not making this road trip. And Kevin Love is still a little sick from having a flu-like something the past week. He said it's lasted too long for it to be food poisoning, so he thinks it's the flu. But he will play, but his conditioning is still a little questionable.
He's still sick? Damn.
Yeah. At least he was yesterday in practice. He practiced, but he afterwards he said, yeah, I'm still feeling it.
Strip club food? I mean,
it must be. I don't know what those LA strip clubs are allegedly feeding people.
Because all the NBA players got sick. Are they all eating at the same? Because here's the thing: like all the strip clubs I've eaten out of, the food's always been really good. I mean, the ones in Texas are like they're another level. Like the strip clubs in Texas, like honestly, it's worth it just going for the food.
Heat at Wizards. This will be fun, right?
plus 10.5 for the Wizards at home.
There's no way.
There's always a way. Don't say that.
No, there's no
way. Come on now.
There's this one Wizards fan on Twitter who is so angry at me because I talk about how terrible they are. And they are terrible. Like, they're really, really bad. And he's like, well, John Wall's hurt and Nene's been hurt. And I was like, right, they still suck. And Randy Whitman's still a terrible coach. He's mad that I rip on Randy Whitman all the time. And it's like,
come back and it hasn't saved them.
Right.
Like, Nene's...
And I do believe John Wall returning will make them competent, but I think I completely overestimated their role players before the season.
Well, it's one where Kevin Serafin took a step back instead of taking a step forward.
Yeah.
Jan Vesely took a step back, or he just kind of stayed where he was. Trevor Booker has been hurt. Jordan Crawford is Jordan Crawford. Bradley Beal's in an awful situation. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, yeah, they're just, and I've said this, I mentioned this last night to the Raptors beat writers, like, you know, I was asking, well, you know, I had this debate last week about who has the worst, you know, who's had the, you know, what's been more heartbreaking or who's suffered the most in these losses, whether it's the Wizards or the Raptors, and you said, well, the Wizards hadn't won, they've won one game now, but the Wizards haven't won, so it's them, just because it's like, you should have won one game, but
yeah.
I still look at it as I understand why they're what. Like, I don't really understand why the Raptors are losing so many games. Like, some of them, it's like, okay, yeah, they got problems. But, like, they have enough talent and they're well coached and they have enough guys that are kind of focused in and playing well. They should be winning some more of these games. They just have weird stuff happen. But the Wizards, I'm like, no, it makes total sense. Like, if the Wizards lost by 40 tonight, I'd be like, that makes sense.
Right.
Like, and there's no team in the league. Like, the Bobcats lost by a bazillion to the Thunder earlier this week, and that was really surprising because the Bobcats have actually been playing well. Like, that was, like, a really crazy game. But the Wizards, any given night, could lose to 40 to almost any team in the league, and I'd be like, that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that's right. Here's a question I have for you. What is the game of the night? Is it Thunder at Nets, or is it Lakers at Rockets? Because I actually think both could be really incredible games.
I mean, for me, I think the better game is Thunder and Nets just because both teams are good.
Yeah.
And the Rockets are kind of the inverse of that, where both teams are not really good. Right. It's like, they're kind of, I guess, and like with the Thunder are great, the Nets are pretty good, and then the, you know, both the Rockets and Lakers are kind of bad. They're not pretty bad, they're just kind of bad. Nets are giving 4, which seems low to me. I feel like the Thunder are in another class above them, but you have to wonder. The Nets have done better defensively.
Nets are also really good at home.
I'm trying to remember if they get. I don't think they get Brook Lopez back tonight.
No, he's out with a foot injury or an ankle sprain, yeah, something like that. And Reggie Evans has a flu.
Reggie Evans has the flu, huh?
Yeah, so you know there won't be a bogus foul against the Thunder at some point.
Perkins versus Reggie Evans. I'm sad we're missing out on that.
I know.
But you get Andre Blatch versus Serge Ibaka, so that's going to be fun.
Or Andre Blatch against Hasheem Thabeet.
Oh! You know, Westbrook versus Darren will be really fun, though.
Yeah, that's always fun, and I actually think that I think we'll see a lot of Joe Johnson and Gerald Wallace switching on Durant. And I think those are two, you know, you're never going to really shut down Durant in any way, although Gerald Wallace has had a lot of success against him in his career defensively. But I think that those are two really tough defenders for Durant to have to figure out and score against throughout the game.
Yeah, I think the Joe Johnson-Kevin Martin matchup will be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So I think that'll probably be pretty much figured out whether it's pretty much if Johnson gets loose or not. That's kind of the key. Like, if he's able to – he's started to show some signs. If he's able to actually put in some points, then the Nets are a whole different team.
Yeah, for sure. And really, that bench is just – if the bench clicks for the Nets, they're a pretty dangerous team.
212.5 over under for Rockets-Lakers. M's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. I would take the under because I don't know that both have... I mean, the pace of that game should be insane.
Yeah.
But I think I might go under just because I don't trust them both to have necessarily competent offensive games in the same night against each other.
Yeah, I went the under just because after Lakers-Nets, it reminded me that anytime that we expect these games to be absolutely nuts, usually some random period of really great defense breaks out for a quarter.
Yeah, that's true.
And that jacks it up. I mean, the Lakers should destroy in this game, right?
Oh, absolutely. They should. I mean, they're a lot more talented than the Rockets. It's just James Harden can give them fits. And I actually think Jeremy Lin has a very favorable matchup tonight. I know he has struggled, but he could have a 20-point game fairly easily.
I'm sad that Terrence Jones has been assigned to the Vipers. I mean, it's probably they do this, and the Rockets are another team that handles their development team very, very well. And I get that. I'm just kind of disappointed. Like, especially because like Delfino at the three, like Delfino's actually openly said my conditioning isn't great.
Right.
Like he's actually, and yet they're so focused on trying to win games right now. They're just playing all the veterans, and that makes me a little nuts. I'm not gonna lie. Although Patrick Patterson's had a really good year.
Yeah, he's been very good, and I know that warms the heart of Kevin Arnovitz and Henry Abbott, who are both Patrick Patterson fans.
Tupat, as the Rocket announcer calls him, which has made me more than once like jerk my head up like a German Shepherd. Tupat for sure.
Pacers Bulls. Which fan base is more angry after tonight?
Oh, Jesus. The Pacers, you know, I think they're 3-2 last five. They were playing really well, and then they had that letdown game against the Warriors, but it was at the end of the road trip. I don't know. That one's really tough. It's Bulls given 3.5. So it's essentially, that's basically home court advantage. It's basically saying it's a pick 'em on neutral court.
Right.
God.
I think I have to go with the Bulls because they're.
Yeah. The over under is 180, which is about where I think it would be. Like, I think it's going to be an 87-80 game.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be 87-80 Bulls because I just feel like if you have a Pacers, if you have a defense that at all able to give the Pacers trouble, then their offense is just not able to overcome. Like the offense can't work through good defense. It can only overcome bad defense.
Right. And that Bulls defense is still very good.
And the Bulls offense is going to have the Bulls offense is in a similar spot, but at least they have guys that, you know, Noah and Boozer are at least going to get putbacks and stuff like that.
Yeah. And unless, I mean, good God, unless you are related to one of these players in this game, you probably don't want to watch it.
I don't know. You should want to watch it because it's going to be George Hill versus Nate Robinson.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
One of the guys I love the most going against Nate Robinson.
Yeah. It's, there's some interesting stuff. It's, you know, how many shots will Paul... Will Luol Deng force Paul George into the first negative field goal made?
He might. That's very possible.
That's really weird. What? CBSSports.com box score says that Paul George made negative four shots.
final game on the docket tonight. Suns Grizzlies. Is there any reason to watch this if you're not a Grizzlies fan?
I'm a little nervous.
Get out of here. Stop it.
I'm a little nervous.
No, you're not. It's the Suns.
I know, but that's the thing. Is the Suns? I've determined this. I figured this out over the weekend. The Suns are the Western Conference Cavaliers. Where there's absolutely no reason for them to be in any game. The bottom three teams should be Wizards, Cavs, Suns. That's where they should be in my power rankings, and yet the Cavaliers are up and the Suns are up because they've won these games. And I just feel like I just am worried that Memphis coming off what was a really demoralizing loss in San Antonio, where there was like a million things that went wrong for them not to win a game that would have been a really great win for them and really for humanity. Like I just feel like I'm worried that there's going to be a little bit of a letdown. It's 10.5, which is a lot of points to be giving, but I'm a little concerned. I guess I don't know. Maybe it's just the old Grizzlies fan in me. I'm I'm so terrified of those letdown games against bad teams coming back. I don't want to see that happen.
I think the thing to remember here is that the Suns are on the road.
Yeah.
And they suck on the road.
And can we just talk about how amazing Michael Beasley's not working out?
It's shocking.
But how could this have happened?
It's shocking.
I was told all summer by Suns fans that no, this is going to be the place where he gets it together, or no, he was only paid $6 million. That's actually a really good value for him. Or you just don't understand him. Be easy.
I this is the problem, is I actually really like him. I like being in the locker room, talking to him.
He's a fun guy.
He's a really fun guy. He's a really like nice and fun guy. He doesn't really have an attitude. And you can tell he is frustrated by his career. It's not something where he doesn't care. I think he genuinely cares. There's just a disconnect with what he needs to do and what he does. And it hasn't been solved yet, and it's probably not going to be solved anytime soon, if ever. This Suns team, has a margin of -10.5 on the road.
Oof.
That's a bad road team.
That is a bad road team. What we got coming up on CBSSports.com? Let's see, I've got an interview, a pretty good feature on DeMar DeRozan, who's actually having a really good season in the midst of the terrible, heartbreaking awfulness that is the Raptors right now. That'll be up later today. Zach's got a really great thing over on Wolf Among Wolves he mentioned earlier. If you want to read,
2,400 words on bad 3-point shooting.
If you want to read the Bible on bad 3-point shooting. You can go check that out. We'll probably write more about the Lakers because we like to pay the bills. I need to dig a little bit into the Hawks. I think that's a team I need to look at a little bit more. Their efficiency differential is actually pretty impressive in a lot of these situations. Like when they're losing, they're not losing by much, and when they're winning by a solid amount.
Right.
So I'm going to try and figure them out a little bit. Who are you working on this week?
I am going to try to have something this weekend on Anderson Varejao. Probably won't happen until Saturday because the Cavs are here in Minneapolis Friday night. But I am very interested in digging into what makes him what he is right now, which is an awesome, like the best role player in the league right now.
And we'll probably also this week we're going to have some big stuff on probably the Thunder. I featured them yesterday on the Baseline Awards. They've got a big game against the Lakers on Friday. I know Royce Young's going to ride off of that and have a feature on the Lakers for Saturday as well. And we'll talk more about that this week. We got to pay more attention to the Thunder because the Thunder are really playing at an exceptionally high level right now.
And we will continue to give you second-by-second updates of when the Lakers miss a shot.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, thanks, Matt.